Have you ever noticed yourself reacting to something in a way that surprises even you? Maybe you snapped at your partner over something trivial or felt paralyzed by anxiety in a situation that shouldn't have triggered such fear. In those moments, it's as if someone else has taken the wheel, your rational mind watching helplessly as emotions drive your behavior. This disconnect between who we think we are and how we actually respond reveals a fundamental gap. Most of us don't truly see our own minds. This gap isn't a character flaw. It's a missing skill. Just as we can learn to play piano or speak a new language, we can develop what's called mindset, the ability to perceive and reshape the inner landscape of our thoughts, feelings, and memories. Think of it as a seventh sense, beyond the five physical senses and our bodily awareness, that allows us to observe our mental processes with clarity and compassion. The revolutionary insight here is that this observational capacity isn't just philosophical navel-gazing. It physically changes your brain, strengthening neural circuits responsible for emotional regulation, empathy, and resilience. When you develop mindset, you're not just understanding yourself better, you're literally rewiring the architecture of your mind. Your brain resembles a three-story house built across evolutionary time. The basement, your brainstem, regulates heartbeat, breathing, and fight or flight responses. The middle floor houses your limbic system, creating emotions and gut reactions. The top floor is your cortex, especially the prefrontal region, which handles abstract thinking, morality, and self-awareness. These floors don't always communicate effectively. When integration fails, chaos erupts. A sleep-deprived psychiatrist melted down at a crepe shop over his children's squabbling. Limbic lava from his emotional brain overwhelmed his prefrontal cortex's regulatory ability. Recovery requires the tripod of reflection: openness, receiving information without preconceptions, observation, watching yourself while experiencing emotions, and objectivity, having thoughts without being consumed by them. 16-year-old Jonathan arrived drowning in rage and suicidal thoughts. Instead of medication, he learned mindfulness, developing awareness of awareness itself. Think of a wheel. The rim represents everything you notice. The hub represents awareness, and spokes represent where you direct attention. Most people live on the rim, completely identified with their experiences. Mindset means resting in the hub, observing with curiosity rather than judgment. Jonathan learned to label thoughts as judging or doubting without fighting them. After 1 year, his emotional storms had dissipated. At 92, Stuart was a brilliant intellectual property lawyer with impeccable logic. Yet when his wife was hospitalized or colleagues faced serious illness, he felt nothing. This emotional flatness wasn't strength, it was disconnection. Stuart's left hemisphere, verbal, logical, sequential, was highly developed from decades of analytical work. But his right hemisphere, nonverbal, emotional, holistic, had remained dormant since childhood. Raised by emotionally cold parents, he'd never learned the language of feelings. Through neuroplasticity exercises, they began with body scans to notice physical sensations and nonverbal games, identifying facial expressions, watching television with sound off to engage visual emotional processing. Gradually, Stuart's world expanded. He took up drawing and journaling, discovering a whole new way of seeing. The breakthrough came when his therapist recalled a story Stuart had shared months earlier. Stuart became tearful, not about the memory itself, but because, "I can't believe you remembered. I can't believe you really know me." For the first time in 9 decades, there was genuine interpersonal resonance. Integration between his hemispheres allowed him to finally experience the emotional connection he'd been missing his entire life. Anne, a successful physician, walked into therapy soaking wet and unaware, a telling sign. Despite professional achievement, she described her life as empty. After her mother's death at 3 and a harsh stepmother, 11-year-old Anne made a decisive gesture across her throat, vowing to never feel anything again. That childhood decision became a neural prison. Anne lived at a little distance from her body. She ate to live, had never been particularly sexual, avoided sports, felt nothing from the neck down. She'd survived unbearable loss by disconnecting, but now felt dead inside. Her heart palpitations were her body's desperate attempts to signal distress that never reached conscious awareness. Anne's challenge was vertical integration, reconnecting her thinking cortex with emotional and physical signals from below. Healing required expanding her window of tolerance, the arousal band within which we function well. Through gradual exposure, noticing finger movements, developing safe place imagery, Anne slowly widened her window. As Anne stayed present, deeper sensations emerged: coldness in her chest, tightness in her limbs, then finally her mother's memory. Her panic transformed into profound grief. As she opened to all feelings, her life gained vitality. The heart palpitations ceased, and the emptiness inside filled with genuine aliveness. Bruce, a Vietnam veteran, once pulled his therapist under a bed during a session, believing they were under attack. He wasn't remembering, he was reliving his trauma as if it were happening now. This is trauma's paradox: fragmented explicit memory alongside vivid implicit memories surfacing as overwhelming flashbacks. We have two memory systems. Implicit memory forms from birth, smells, emotions, bodily sensations, and doesn't feel like remembering when activated. You don't recall learning to walk, you just walk. Explicit memory emerges around age 2, creating the sensation of consciously retrieving the past. The hippocampus acts as a puzzle assembler, integrating implicit elements into coherent memories tagged with time and context. Under extreme stress, this integration breaks down. Terror floods the body with cortisol, blocking hippocampal function, while adrenaline enhances implicit encoding. The result? Traumatic experiences remain as free-floating puzzle pieces, perceptions and emotions that flood awareness without being recognized as past memories. Healing requires dual awareness, staying present while exploring past trauma. Allison discovered through body scanning that her back pain connected to buried sexual assault. Using visualization techniques like a mental file cabinet, she retrieved implicit memories without overwhelm. Through therapy, she learned to locate these experiences properly in time, allowing her hippocampus to transform implicit-only memories into integrated, explicit narratives. Rebecca thrived despite an alcoholic mother and bipolar father because her aunt made her feel she was inside her heart. This connection provided the attunement that developed internal strength, demonstrating how early relationships shape both life narratives and neural development. Research reveals 4 attachment patterns. Secure, 2/3 of children, shows distress at separation but quick soothing upon reunion. Avoidant shows minimal reaction from consistently unresponsive parenting. Ambivalent displays heightened, unresolved distress from inconsistent parenting. Disorganized manifests as frightened, contradictory behaviors from terrifying caregiving. The hopeful discovery: parents with difficult childhoods who developed coherent narratives about those experiences have securely attached children. Making sense of your past breaks negative patterns. What matters isn't memory accuracy, but narrative coherence, how it flows logically, includes appropriate detail, and shows self-awareness. Stewart's inability to recall relationship memories, despite excellent factual recall, revealed dismissing attachment, blocked integration between his fact-oriented left hemisphere and autobiographical right hemisphere. When Julie recognized how her father's alcoholic threats resurfaced with her defiant son, she used journaling and meditation to transform triggering moments into healing opportunities. Early experience isn't fate. By making sense of our past, we liberate ourselves and nurture the next generation. As people work through these domains of integration, something unexpected emerges. Rather than becoming self-absorbed, they develop a desire to give back and expand their circle of concern. This transpiration, breathing across boundaries, dissolves the confined I into an expanded we. Neuroscience reveals how our brains distinguish us from them. When resonant circuits engage, we feel others' feelings and understand their minds. But when we can't identify with someone, these circuits shut down, and we see others as objects rather than subjects. This mechanism may explain humanity's violent history. Under threat, we project fears onto others and perceive malevolence where none exists. True happiness emerges not from self-focus, but from connecting to something larger. The ancient Greeks called this eudaimonia, well-being rooted in meaning and connection rather than mere pleasure. Science confirms we're built to be a we. Fulfillment comes through authentic connections that break down isolating boundaries. Einstein described our sense of separation from the universe as a delusion, restricting us to personal desires. He suggested our task is widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures. While our brains haven't evolved genetically in 40,000 years, our minds have, shaping brain growth through cultural patterns. By cultivating mindsight intentionally, we can influence cultural evolution, a journey from isolation to integration, from confusion to compassion.